This is the Chochmat Nashim podcast on JewishCoffeeHouse.com. Because Judaism is better when women are heard. Now, here are Rachel Stomel, Anne Gordon, and Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Anne Gordon, here today with
Rachel Stomel
and Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
There's been a lot of current events that brings me to this topic, namely, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, the idea that all of Israel, and perhaps even in this day and age, all of humanity is responsible one for the other. And I want to explore it in the context of other principles that we say about Judaism all the time, V'haftalecha kamocha, that we should love our neighbor as ourselves, and I think that there are limits to both of these. Before we get into that, I want to quote from a recent New Yorker article called The Coronavirus Crisis, suitably enough. It talks about the 4 points that have worked in terms of establishing re-entry. How can we go back? And it talks about hygiene and distancing and screening and masks. And then it adds, and this is a point that I think is very interesting and brings me to our larger discussion today, culture is the fifth, meaning those are four and now there's a fifth, arguably the most difficult pillar of a new combination therapy to stop the coronavirus. People tend to focus on two desires, safety and freedom. Keep me safe and leave me alone. And then explains, you know, one of the people that's quoting here says she needs her people, both staff and residents in a particular facility, to embrace the desire to keep others safe, not just themselves. She needs them to say, I'm worried about my sore throat and I'm going to stay home. Or I'm okay with being reminded to pull my mask up. That's not the culture of our street right now, but it is the culture of people in the operating room who do surgery, right? The concern of the possibility of infection there is so high, and we don't have that mentality in our post-coronavirus or in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. You know, can we get to that point of a mentality of being not just responsible for ourselves, but also for others? And the article continues, it's about wanting, among other things, never to be the one to make someone else sick. I just want to credit the author of this piece. It's called Amid the Coronavirus Crisis, A Regimen for Reentry by Atul Gawande, who's very famous book, Being Mortal, should be read by literally every single person alive. Before we get into this topic, however, we have our troll and our firgun.
Today's troll and firgun are a little bit longer, so we hope that you'll bear with us, but we hope that you enjoy them, as we do. Our troll. To me, mocking the words of rabbis is a very serious avera. If this is not your rabbi and you don't consider his opinion binding on you, that is your prerogative. If you are not his follower, then it has nothing to do with you. To launch an attack on Facebook, according to the Chafetz Chaim, you have no share in the world to come. I did not know the Chafetz Chaim was aware of Facebook, but that is very, very interesting to me. This is called the Paro syndrome. Paro didn't do anything himself, he only used words. No matter how clear it was that his actions were evil, and no matter how many warnings he got, he held on to his ideology and continued to act against his fellow human being. You must understand that your post and activism is causing violence against the Haredi community. Your activism is destroying all the good work that's being done. And like Paro, you will pay the price. I can only thank this man for giving us such entertainment on my Facebook page.
This was, by the way, in response to a post of saying that shaytels are causing the virus. Is that correct?
Yes. All I did was kind of like just say this is kind of ridiculous to this post that was saying how women should throw down their shaytels and be so modest and save the world from corona. I got to say, these guys really entertain me. But this is actually, this firgun is such a beautiful letter that we received that it's a little bit long, but it's worthwhile. It goes, Dear Chochmat Nashim, I wanted to take a minute to thank you for giving me language to say what I knew I was always feeling, for calling out those who need to be called out, and for overall gearing our community towards a healthier Jewish Orthodox lifestyle. As a woman growing up in the ultra-Orthodox world, I never knew Gemara. We always knew that Gemara was for boys, and us girls wouldn't understand it. When I saw your article on the Women's Siyum HaShas, the first ever Women's Siyum HaShas, wow, I didn't know women were learning Torah. I didn't know women were learning Gemara. I didn't know women were learning the Daf. I saw parts of the video in the Siyum HaShas, and my eyes started tearing. The Torah was never intended to just be given to men. Moshe didn't say, here's the Torah, and only men should look at it. He didn't have to say it's for women. It was self-understood. Seeing that video, watching that powerful women get up and talk, and watching men support powerful women, it was all I needed. I signed up to as many Facebook groups as I could find, and I started learning the Daf. I kept seeing posts come in every day. March 8th was the first time I learned Daf with a beautiful group of women. From time to time, I rewatch the women's Siyum HaShas. I don't know where I'll be in 7 years. I do know, though, that the opportunities for women and girls in the Orthodox world will have changed dramatically. It already has. I hope, Be'ezrat Hashem, to complete the Shas by the next women's Siyum HaShas. I hope with all my might to see many women, men, daughters, and sons as possible there. I hope that every woman and girl on this earth will know that the doors to education are not only not closed, but as open as can be, and I hope we will take advantage of that. Thank you, Chochmat Nashim, for encouraging me to take this beautiful next step in my life. To me, that is all that we could be asking for in the work that we do. So I want to thank you who reach out to us and give us your feedback and let us know that you hear us and that we are making a difference in your life.
Okay, so let's come back to this discussion. In Israel, where the coronavirus has kind of receded, at least we hope so, certainly it is less prevalent than it has been, and the numbers are still exceedingly excellent, there is great hope, and for some people, you know, a complete attitude that it is over, we are done, we can go back to normal living. That is not what any of the health people are saying. All of the health ministers, even the people who are most inclined to relax the guidelines, still require certain limitations, including wearing of masks. But if you walk around, and it will depend on your neighborhood and it will depend on your society a little bit, but if you walk around and look for who's wearing the masks and who's wearing them correctly, right, with nose and mouth covered and not as throat ornaments, as one friend likes to call them.
Wait, it's not supposed to be like to hold your chin on?
No.
It's not the purpose of the mask?
No, nor is it supposed to be a loopy earring, right? There's many new attires that are not what the mask is supposed to be about. So the whole discussion then comes to be like, if this is gone, why do I need to wear a mask? And the answer is, A, we don't know that it's gone. And again, we're speaking very specifically from Israel, fully recognizing that the situation in other parts of the world is dramatically different. And we mean no disrespect for the difficult times other people are having, depending on where you are. But so, for example, we know that wearing a mask does not particularly protect the wearer of the mask from somebody else's infection. A little bit it does, but not tremendously. What we do know, however, is that somebody who wears a mask who is infected and does not even know it, let's say, right? They're asymptomatic or they haven't developed symptoms yet or whatever, or they think they're past their symptoms. That person can protect against infecting somebody else by wearing a mask. And some of the statistics I've seen say 95%, 90%, 75%, whatever the number is, it goes a far way preventing the spread of this virus, which is so virulent once it's in its mode of spreading. So the only reason to wear a mask then, meaning the main reason to wear a mask, I shouldn't say the only one, is to prevent the people around you from getting sick, including strangers, which means that you have to have a certain measure of generosity in your conduct. Because if you're simply going to focus on yourself, wearing a mask, I find it to be very annoying, very uncomfortable, a big pain in the neck. And yet, right, like there's still this kind of moral, social contract to behave in accord with protecting the people around us. That value is a very Jewish value.
So, Anne, you started out by saying, you know, at the beginning of this podcast that we're going to talk about Kol Yisrael Arivim Zeh LaZeh, that all Jews are basically responsible for each other. So I think that's a great example with the mask. While it does protect yourself a little bit, it's mostly there to protect everyone else. And in the long run, protecting everyone else does help protect yourself too. But in the immediate short term, you know, it's hard to see a personal benefit, especially, you know, last week in Israel, we had this insane heat wave where it was, you know, 109 in some cities. Wearing a mask on top of that was the last thing that you wanted to do. You know, it's hard to sometimes put your own personal discomfort aside for the sake of other people when you're that uncomfortable. But if you think about it in the long term, it's also for yourself.
I'm not sure that's true. Let's put it this way. I think the reason that we need to wear the mask is because we're protecting other people. I think that we do this in many, many areas of our lives. We give tzedakah because we care about other people's needs. We make food for people who have just had babies or whatever it is, right? There's all kinds of aspects of chesed that we do because we participate in a community. We care about the people around us, even when it's at some hardship to ourselves, right? It's usually easier to do nothing than to stick your neck out to help somebody else. That, to me, is the bigger question here. The mask, to me, is like, that's a good entry point because it's so clear that it's really about other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that the values that we need to demonstrate are, you know, paying attention to the needs of other people as well, and not just for ourselves.
I can't get over the demonstrations of hundreds of Americans, with or without their weaponry. Some of them come in full tactical gear and all of their automatic rifles, saying, you know, you can't prevent us. This is our rights. And then you have the videos. I watched this video at least three times. I really couldn't believe it. There's a woman trying to go into a store. And he says, ma'am, you know, here's a mask. Everyone in our store has to wear a mask. It was a grocery store in America. And she's like, I'm not wearing a mask. I have a medical condition that says I can't wear a mask. It's like not good for me. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. What is that condition? No, I don't have to tell you because it's my HIPAA right not to tell you what my medical condition is. But I have a medical condition and I'm not wearing a mask. Okay, ma'am, can you give me your grocery list and I'll get the stuff for you? But you can't come into our store without a mask. And she says, I'm not going to give you my grocery list. That's private. What if I have personal things on there that I don't want you to see? And how would I pay for my groceries if I give you my list and you get them for me? Well, ma'am, you would give me your credit card. I'm going to give you my private credit card. And this is going on, I promise you, at least 4 minutes long. And the manager comes out and he says, please, you have to understand this is our policy. And she goes, oh, where's that written? And he shows her the whole, you know, list of new policies that were created just for this. And she goes on and on. And it's clear that she came with the intent of creating this scene. And I'm watching these Americans insist that it's infringing upon their rights to wear a mask, and it's infringing upon their rights not to be able to go to a bar or a pub or go to work. And on the one hand, I completely understand that lockdown is an economic significant issue for many, many, many people. Well, I'm not debating that at all. But to go and say that you're infringing on my rights to wear a mask is exact opposite of what we're saying about being responsible for other people and being personally responsible for your chelek, for your part in what is a communal and global pandemic and something that each of us has a part to play in. And I find it fascinating that regardless of how many people, you know, you think did or didn't or don't, you know, they wear their masks on their ears, Israelis have overall been incredible about staying home, about generally wearing masks, the people that I see, about not screaming and yelling, about opening up. I think everyone understood, like, this is a crisis. You know, we've been through more crises than Americans have, to be honest with you. We go through wars. We, you know, we know that we are all responsible. Everybody does their part. Everybody goes to the army. To me, it's such a cultural difference in certain aspects of American culture about how it's my right to not do something as opposed to my responsibility to do something. And I think this really speaks to the point that you're making.
I hear you. I think that we may be crossing the line in the other direction at this point, meaning I agree with you up until now, but what I see now and what I hear now and the, oh, we're done. Oh, it's over. Oh, you know, forget about it. Azov, don't be ridiculous. That's too much. These are comments, some of which I've heard myself and some of which other people I know who are upset by it have heard as well, including from, you know, their children, for example, sure, adult Israeli children. So the culture is shifting because the external reality has changed as well. People were kind of willing to buckle down when it was a fear of millions of deaths.
Yeah, well, I mean, our numbers are good.
I think that the Israeli attitude that's happening right now and the shift of, you know, whatever, let's not take this so seriously, it comes from the more from the cultural reality that we have here of, you know, what's known as yihyeh beseder, that, oh, it'll be fine, it'll be okay, versus what's happening in America, which is more, you can't tell me what to do. Even if they both have the same outcome, they are both coming from very different places.
Right. I agree 100%.
And on both those
I don't
things,
agree,
you know, make...
because I think our numbers are so down that Israelis are like, it's more like, okay, we did what we had to do, we've passed that terrifying point, and now we're okay. I don't think anyone is like, oh, it'll be fine. Like, certainly nobody was like that a month ago or 6 weeks ago. Nobody that I really knew was walking around saying, screw it, I don't care.
I'm hearing a lot of, oh, the Israeli government overreacted. What was Bibi hiding from us, right? Instead of saying like, oh, hello, when you take measures to protect against mortality and then mortality doesn't happen, maybe those measures had effect.
Obviously.
I mean, you also see this in, like, very rarely, but you still see it when we have our military operations or we have rockets. There's the siren, you know, and most people go down into their sealed rooms, whatever. But you always have the occasional guys who are at their windows, you know, taking videos, saying, whoa, look at that, whoa. And they're watching, you know, the Iron Dome take down the rockets. And, like,
true,
you know, it's kind of like we have this, on the one hand, yes, they see that there's a threat. Yes, they see it's right there and they're videoing it. On the other hand, like, why, if you see it's there, clearly go into your shelter. Like, what are you doing? You know? So I kind of feel like now it's kind of like we had our siren, so to speak. The siren stopped and people are kind of coming out of their shelters, you know, cautiously. And hopefully we won't have to go back in.
Well, it's a lot of changes happening. Now we have a government Now we have schools back. I mean, it's a whole new world out there, literally. Who knows what's going to happen? Hopefully we will recover both from not having a government for so long and from Corona.
So talking about recovering and coming out of, you know, a more emergency reality to a more normal reality at some point, hopefully. So it's going to be Shavuot this week. We're looking at Megillat Rut, the Book of Ruth that we read on Shavuot. And Shavuot starts out with this kind of emergency situation where there's a famine in the land. We talk about one man who leaves Israel and he goes to Moab with his family. All these catastrophes happen to them. It's pretty bad. And then eventually, you know, they come back to Israel. And when they're back in Israel, the reality is a bit different now. There are crops that are growing and people are harvesting them. You know, Ruth, who is our heroine in the story, so she's collecting charity from the people, and people are deliberately leaving for her stuff to collect. So you kind of contrast this, you know, emergency situation to a more compassionate society. And it's interesting now, I'm just, you know, just thinking out loud, how that shift happened, because we don't really hear so much. We hear about the personal shift, you know, or the personal expressions between Ruth and Naomi. But we don't really hear what happened in Israel at that time while they were away. What happened in the society that, you know, made it, they had to actually leave because they weren't, you know, being taken care of, versus afterwards they came back and suddenly society seemed more compassionate. And maybe whatever lessons we can take from there, we can apply to us right now. Societies that are maybe thinking more, you know, all for themselves, to shift and move towards a society that's more compassionate to other people. And like you said, Anne, you know, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, everyone really looking out for each other and making society as a whole a much better place.
Yeah. See, I feel like Megillat Rut is always lauded as an example of chesed, right? The statement of Chazal is, there's no law in Megillat Rut. It's not a book of halakha. So why do we have this book? And the answer is, well, kulo chesed. And it's all about teaching the going out from, like, from beyond yourself to help somebody else, as Boaz does, as Ruth does, obviously, with regard to Naomi. I would say that I wonder what would have happened if people had helped that family before they ever left to Moab. Would they have then needed to depart in the face of a famine, right? Like, I don't know. I hope we never know famine to understand what it means to truly be hungry, which we don't know. A few months ago, I would have said, may we never know a pandemic. So I would like to add to that. May we never know pestilence. May we never know any of these other makot that have happened in the past. But my point is really just that when everybody is looking out for everybody else, then the people who need looking out for can get looked out for in a way that I think happens at the end of Megillat Rut and less so at the beginning. And yes, as an aside, I know that the other reason that's given for Megillat Rut is that it shows the lineage of David HaMelech. That's a separate conversation.
It's interesting that, you know, that the lineage of what establishes our eternal kingdom, basically, of, you know, the eternal line of David HaMelech, of King David, comes out of this sort of societal shift that happens. I think that's important, you know, that you can only really have a established leadership when it's born out of this sense of societal responsibility for each other.
Oh, I think
that the king doesn't come and save everyone. The king is born out of this society that is, you know, a better environment.
I think that's exactly where kingship comes from for the Jews, right? Meaning if you follow King David's line back, David and Judah, Yehuda, they have this same trait of being, you know, willing to take responsibility even when it, you know, doesn't look so good for them. We see this in the story of Yehuda and Tamar when, you know, Yehuda could have gotten away with some pretty slimy business if he had just kept his mouth shut. And instead he says, like, oh, you are right. I did the wrong thing. And the details of the story, like, go read the Bible. You can find it there. But the point is just that he's willing to say, oh, I did the wrong thing. And David HaMelech later, right, he does the same thing with Bathsheba. When he needs harsh rebuke, but when he's told you did the wrong thing, he also owns up to it. That culture of responsibility, I think, is exactly what it means to be a Jewish king. I think it's also a culture that we should have amongst not the kingship, meaning just regular Jewish people. We don't have a monarchy anymore. Let's take responsibility. So my next question is what I said at the, you know, at the beginning, which I think is probably what's more interesting to me, because right, like, of course we say everybody should be responsible for one another. Of course everybody should do chesed. Of course everybody should stick their neck out. We're an organization that is founded on people sticking their necks out, right? This is, Shoshana, this is all of your activism, right? That's the whole point of it, is to help people. I'm struck by the question of, are there limits to this? Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh, At what point do we say, now we've done enough and doing more becomes a problem? Does that ever happen with Kol Yisrael Arevim in terms of being responsible for one another? And I believe that it does in the context of V'ahavta Lecha Kamocha. If you are supposed to love your neighbor as yourself, right, and you are supposed to treat them as you would want yourself treated, what happens when your neighbor doesn't want to be treated that way? Are you doing them a kindness then to do what you would have wanted when you're then dealing with somebody else?
I mean, like to veer off to like paternalism kind of thing. You know, like I know what's right. better for you because that's what I think is better for me. Therefore, I will bestow this great thing on you that you don't actually want necessarily.
Exactly. Like that kind of thing. And my question is, does that apply when we're talking about Kol Yisrael Arevim? I'm struck by the fact that, you know, one of the reasons, and it's such a small halachic point, right? One of the reasons that somebody can come home from shul and make havdalah for people who have not yet heard havdalah, meaning somebody who has davened in shul, said havdalah in shul, heard havdalah in shul, comes home and makes havdalah for the household, is because Kol Yisrael Arevim, right? Meaning we have principles of where halachic responsibility kicks in. It's not just a moral or a chesed perspective. So that makes it feel like very technical. And so you can't really go beyond, you can't do too much that way. But I'm not sure. This is why I want to raise it as a question, because I feel like if we're living in this era of we're supposed to be helping other people by putting ourselves out a little bit, by doing things like the discomfort of wearing a mask, do we ever hit the point where we say like, no, if we do this on behalf of other people, we have gone too far.
Like on the airplane, you know, you should put on your mask first before someone else. You know, there are certain things where, you know, I guess not that you take precedence over someone else, but maybe in the grand order of keeping everything. Is that kind of like what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe. That might be a good example where, like, to be able to help anybody, you have to sometimes help yourself first.
If I'm understanding correctly, are you kind of setting up this parallel of not necessarily opposites, but two, I guess, complementary sides of having social responsibility and personal responsibility and knowing, you know, where those lines cross. That ve'ahavta lerecha kamocha, of loving your neighbor as yourself, and kol Yisrael arevim ze laze, that everyone's responsible for each other, are in conflict sometimes?
I think they are in conflict sometimes. And I think that we live in an era which is very focused on the individual. When we try to do our part as socially responsible people, we are in that tricky middle zone sometimes of trying to help other people. That's what we're supposed to do, right? We're supposed to help other people. And yet, if our culture around us, right, this is the whole business with the mask, if our culture around us is not really about helping other people, then we may veer into stepping on other people's toes when we shouldn't. I think we haven't developed this muscle very well of late. That doesn't mean individuals. Obviously, there are individuals who have overly developed it and know exactly how to help other people without overstepping their bounds. But I wonder about this as a society at large.
We also get accused of this a bunch, you know, when people say, oh, you know, what if women want to be erased? Like, did you ask, you know, this community, maybe they don't want their faces shown, and how dare you come up and, you know, to impose your Western colonialist feminist ideas onto, you know, these communities who don't even want it.
Right, exactly.
I definitely have encountered that. At the end of the day, then what you need to do is say, it's not about you. And I actually think I wrote an article that literally said that. Like, if you don't want to show your face, so don't show your face. But as a society, as a community, erasing women does damage. And so sometimes you have to pit the individual want and the individual freedom versus the communal need and the communal health, which is what I find often. I think you and I, Rachel, have, you know, we go back and forth a lot about that, because it's like, you know, well, what if this helps one aguna, but it's going to, you know, not going to help the whole, because giving more power to the rabbanut, you know, or letting women have education separately is going to help this class or these classes or these families, but on the whole, it's a bad idea. So it's a lot of times we come back to that whole, at what point is the personal, the communal, the individual desire? And I think that brings us back to all of this. It's like, you know, there is a balance. You are both a person and a part of the community. And we have to find that important balance between, yes, taking care of our individual needs, yes, taking care of our communal responsibilities, and understanding where those limitations are for all of those values that we hold, which is not an easy thing, by the way. What do you think? Please let us know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
If you like this podcast, then please recommend it to your friends. Word of mouth is the best way to get more listens and shares. And let us know what you think. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think something very important was left out and you want to add it in? Then we are all ears, because Judaism is better when women are heard, and also when you are heard. So let us know what you think.
Can you hear us now?